Good morning, folks, and thank you for joining our call. With me today is Alex Gersh, our CFO. This morning we released our Q1 2016 trading update, and the purpose of this call is to take you through the highlights and address any questions you might have. Overall, we've had a decent start to the financial year with good performances across all our divisions. Group revenues increased by 16% to 339 million sterling, and operating profits increased by 36% to 43 million pounds. This performance is particularly pleasing in the context of us bringing together two businesses. In online, revenue increased 17%, with regulated revenues up 21%, and unregulated revenues, which were impacted by our exit from Portugal, down 14%. Our marketing, technology, and operations all performed well during the Cheltenham and Grand National meetings. Sports revenue in the quarter increased by 17%, driven by a 23% increase in sportsbook stakes and a 5% growth in exchange and B2B revenues. Sports results overall favour the customer, with a punter-friendly Cheltenham more than offsetting the favourable football results. Accordingly, the sportsbook net revenue margin was below our expectations and still lower than last year. In gaming, revenues continue to be driven by increased cross-selling from sports and strong growth in mobile, with total revenues up 17%. Turning briefly to Australia, Sportsbet continues to grow strongly and take market share, despite the market becoming increasingly competitive. Stakes increased by 31%, driven by 42% growth in actives. Revenue growth of 25% was impacted by punter-friendly results, primarily in racing, where 21 of the top 50 staking races resulted in a negative margin. In the US, revenue was up 22%, with 19% growth to TVG, supplemented by continued growth in the online casino in New Jersey. After many, many years of waiting, we have been awarded a license to operate a horse racing exchange wagering platform in New Jersey. We will launch the product next week. This will be the first legal exchange wagering product in the US, and will be a good test to see if there is pent-up demand for fixed odds betting in that country. In retail, total revenues increased by 5%. Excluding the benefit of new shop openings and currency, like-for-like revenue decreased 1%. This decrease was driven by the adverse sports results, particularly in our Irish estates during Cheltenham, which offset like-for-like stakes growth of 2% and machine gaming growth of 3%. And finally, a brief update on regulation, on integration. This is on track and we're progressing well. We have a strong leadership team in place, and the restructuring of the business has commenced. While there's still a way to go in terms of fully integrating the businesses, it is pleasing that already customers are starting to see the benefit as we share product between the two brands. Some early examples include the release of proprietary games content to Betfair customers, the introduction of flash markets, their very short-term soccer markets, to Paddy Power for in-play football betting, and the use of time form analysis and data in Paddy Power shops, and the introduction of new sports and markets to the Betfair Sportsbook. I'll now hand you over to Alex for a brief financial update.
Good morning, everyone. Q1 EBITDA increased by 27% to $59 million, and there are a few things to note there that I will highlight. First, as Brian has referenced, revenue was affected by adverse results in Cheltenham and some in Australia, and the customers in Cheltenham, particularly customers, won over $20 million from us. As a result, group net revenue percentage of 7.5% is approximately 1.5% below what we would have expected on a normalized level. Secondly, of course, the marketing costs have increased by 20% or $13 million, and it's driven by a significant increase in competitive pressure, again, as Brian has mentioned, in Australia as well as in UK and Ireland. Last year in Australia, our competitors have gone through a rebranding exercise that helped us out. This year, everybody is strong and firing on all cylinders. The year-on-year profit growth was also impacted by about $3 million in new taxes, and that relates to Irish point-of-consumption tax, increased machine gaming duty, and increased Australian product fees. Finally, this represents underlying EBITDA and excludes exceptional items resulting from the merger, which we will talk about. All of those exceptional items we will talk about in August. However, I think the most important one is to just to mention now is these numbers, of course, exclude the amortization of intangibles that will arise under the accounting, under purchase accounting for the acquisition of Petra Vitality Tower. The acquisition value is over 4 billion pounds. We will, of course, have to apportion it between goodwill and other intangible assets, which then will be amortized. And that amortization will be very, very significant over the, as we have the numbers. Of course, it is a non-cash item, but it will be very significant. Of course, we will always report underlying results first and all of those special items separately. The final thing I will say is that we feel very good about being on track for our synergy number of 50 million of 50 million per annum, and we discussed it that we will achieve it in year three of integration. However, we will give you more of an update on it in August as well, in terms of what the progress is and what we and any updates on what we think what we see in the future. The last and the final thing is the group net debt is a stand of 54 million, excluding customer balances, which again shows that the business continues to go well, generate cash, and there are no issues at that. With that, I will hand it back to Priyan. Thank you.
Thank you, Alex. I think we'll now go to questions.
Okay, thank you. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please key star then one on your telephone. If you then decide to withdraw your question, simply key star then two. All questions will be answered in the order received, and you will be advised when to ask your question. All other lines will remain on listen only. And your first question comes from the line of Patrick Coffey from Barclays. Please go ahead. I do apologize. That's Tim Kinnett from Bank of America.
Good morning, and thanks very much for taking the question. My first one was on the Q1 margins. So you said they were sort of impacted by the adverse reporting results. So should we see some margin recovery going into H2? And so could you just tell us a little bit about how we should think about margins evolving in the full year? And then I just have one second question, which is related to the cost synergies. So I appreciate, you know, it's still 50 million tiles in the 3-year timeline, but could you tell us a little bit about how we should think about the phasing in 2016, both in terms of the run rate cost savings and also the costs associated with achieving those cost savings? Thanks very much.
So Tim, taking the first one first, I mean, as you probably know, Paddy Power previously gave net margin or gave percentage margin guidance by channel. We haven't done that at this stage. It's something we'll think about. And what we said in the statement is that 7.5% group net revenue percentage for the quarter was approximately 1.5% below what the group would have been expected to achieve based on previous years. So we're expecting we go back to normal margin, which would be, in round numbers, 150 basis points above where we've been. But we're not giving explicit guidance for the new group, and definitely not giving that by quarter. On the point of synergies, we started well. This stuff will be very lumpy, and we think the right thing to do is talk about it more fully at the half-year results in August. But it's too early to give any new information in terms of timing or cost of achieving them.
The only thing I would say is, of course, the cost of achieving synergies, you would expect the vast majority of those to occur this year.
Okay, thanks very much.
Okay, thank you. Your next question comes from the line of Patrick Coffey from Barclays. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi everyone. Three questions for me, if that's okay. Firstly, on AML, so there have been various pieces of market commentary recently around the potential impact from the EU's fourth directive on anti-money laundering. Can you just clarify your position on the potential impact or otherwise of that? The second question is on Australia. Recently, obviously, the federal government confirmed plans not to legalise in-play betting and crack down on wagering on credit. Can you clarify the potential impact on both of these issues for you? And then finally, just on lifetime values, on a conference call a month ago, William Hill said that the lifetime value of some of the customers that it acquired was lower than they had anticipated. I was wondering if you could give us some confidence that the lifetime value of the customers that you've been recently acquiring is high and in line with where it's been before. Thanks.
Yeah, so Patrick, I'll take the second two. So on the William Hill point, we just don't have a comment. We are pretty busy at the integration, as you can imagine. We're merging the two businesses. Today is day 92. And the reason I highlight that is some of the marketing decisions were made last year. Some marketing decisions are being made now. So there's some stuff that both the combined management team love about what the other side are doing and some stuff they're somewhat critical about. But we're very happy with the progress we're making. On Australia, we were late to betting and running. We feel we have a different solution to that employed by others in the market. I think we're disappointed by the referral review, but not entirely surprised. It's not great to lose betting and running, and credit's a very small part of our business, but it's another part that we probably will now lose. So it's not a material, I don't think it's materially bad news, but it's an incremental headwind that we probably could have done with that.
Okay, on AML, I think the first thing we probably should say that we're surprised how all of a sudden this became new news since this directive has been published in June of 2015. And, of course, since then, we've been looking at the both companies, have been looking at the processes, strengthening the processes, make sure that we can be in full compliance with everything that we need to be in compliance with. We expect the regulations in the UK to actually be published in autumn or winter of 2017, and to be honest with you, there is really, we take AML very seriously and have for many years, so we feel that our current processes are very strong and robust, and while we need to see the final regulations to see what the actual regulations would be, we don't feel that there is a huge amount for us to continue to do. We're already take it seriously and have a very, very strong policies and procedures. So as we sit here today, we don't see any significant impact on our business.
Brilliant, thanks. Can I just ask one quick follow-up? And nothing to do with that. Just on promo users. I asked this at the full year results, but just wondering if you've done any work in terms of cracking down on promo abusers across the two brands, or whether that maybe happens later on in the year.
Look, Patrick, to be honest, I know it's been looked at. I don't know how material that's been rolled out. I think the spirit of how these things have played out so far is we've shared knowledge effectively and early. Both businesses had the opportunity to plan for day one. So, for instance, trading information was very helpful to share trading information early, but a structural approach to promo views that requires technology, that will take longer. And we have, as you can imagine, we've got a whole host of technology projects to manage. So I don't think it's done yet. I think people have been working on it for some time.
Right. Thanks a lot. Cheers.
Thank you. Your next question comes from the line of Vaughan Lewis from Morgan Stanley.
Morning. I've got a few, if that's okay. The first one on the AML question, can I just ask the same one on self-exclusions, whether you've seen any impact there and what the outlook is. Secondly, on the sports margins, you talked about the impact of results. Was there any impact from pricing and promotions around Cheltenham, which seemed to be more aggressive than normal? And then looking into April, it seems to have been a very good run of results. So are you at more sort of normal levels year to date by now or not? And then finally, on the exchange and B2B, you say that's up 5%, but I guess the exchange is the majority of that. So should we assume exchange is up around 5% or so as well? Thanks.
Paul, I'm sorry, I missed the second one. You want to just self-exclusion results, exchange?
Oh, just April seems to have had very good sports results. So just whether your sports margins year to date are back to more normalised levels. Thanks.
Yeah, obviously I'm delighted your results are good. I think April results are okay. They're not as dramatically weak as March, but I'd say they're only okay. There's been no massive overcompensation in terms of percentage outcomes. On the self-exclusion, again, to echo Alex's point, both businesses have been doing this in slightly different ways for years. And we've put both teams together and worked out what we can do more efficiently, but also worked out what best practice is. So while we take our regulatory obligations seriously and indeed take our obligations to be a responsible operator very seriously, and I can't suggest that we're perfect all of the time. I think our processes in place are, sorry, our processes are well established and have been in place, and accordingly, I don't think you're going to hear us talking about them in the context of result, or in the context of results call like this. Cheltenham was pretty bad across all the channels. I mean, it was obviously an Irish skew there. We've called out how Irish retail was particularly influenced. The soccer continues to be okay, but results haven't been disproportionately good in April. And on the exchange of B2B, you're right, B2B is the less significant part of that. The exchange was slightly helped by some currency in its favor. We're very happy, you know, that we don't forecast that the exchange will grow at rates of 5%. So even discounting that a bit, we're very happy with that progress. I wouldn't be extrapolating that we've unlocked. I don't think we've unlocked anything in the exchange that wasn't previously visible to us. So I think that was just a very strong quarter as opposed to something more structural.
What's the main element of pricing and promotions making the margins weaker at Cheltenham? Or do you think it
was? I think Alex called it out, as I think we have for a while. It remains very competitively intense, and for customers who are able to or want to take advantage of all of the promotion and pricing stuff, there's extraordinary generosity. I think we're happy that we're trading where we thought we'd be, but that results have gone against us. So we're happy with the structure level of margin, but as you know well, there's a results component to that as well that we just can't control.
Great, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Gavin Keller from Goodbody. Please go ahead.
Morning, guys. Just two from me, please. Just on marketing, cost is up 22%, or thereabouts, in 13 million in Q1. Should we see the same rate of year-on-year growth as we move through the remainder of the year? Can you give any guidance on that? Because you did note that some decisions were made last year and whether they impact the whole year. And just on free bets, could you give any guidance on what percentage of amounts wagers free bets were in the online division?
On marketing, we won't be giving any guidance. Suffice to say, Gavin, that obviously Q2 is the quarter of the Euros. You should expect an increase in marketing spend, even off of these high levels. From the rest of that, it will level off, maybe have a decline, slight decline. But overall, the marketing has significantly increased and will increase. Some of it has to do with Euros. Some of it has to do with competitive intensity. On free bets, we won't be guiding or talking about free bets at this point. We may decide to talk about it at the 6 month results, but certainly nothing now.
Okay, cool. And just one follow-up, just on the exchange, can you quantify how big the currency tailwind was in the period?
We're not going to talk about the exchange, but the currency, the overall currency impact was actually quite small. It just obviously affects different elements differently, but the overall currency impact, we think, for the quarter was about $2 million positive on revenue and about $1 million negative on EBITDA.
Thanks very much,
guys. Obviously, that's plus and minuses in there.
Okay, cool. Thanks, Maria.
Okay, thank you. And our next question comes from the line of Joe Thomas from HSBC. Please go ahead.
Hello. A couple of things. The New Jersey exchange. Could you perhaps give any indications in the broadest possible terms? I'm sure you're not going to give the specifics on the scale of startup losses that we should be anticipating there. Secondly, back on the 20 million laundering point. I know Betfair's obviously had systems in place seriously tackling anti-money laundering. Are you comfortable with the Paddy Power side of the business is as tight on anti-money laundering as the Betfair side?
Yeah, sure. Hi. On the New Jersey exchange, I don't think startup losses is going to be particularly material. We just don't know what the potential for this business is. On a good day, we think that there will be demand for fixed odds horse race betting, and that the exchange allows winners to bet. We allows us to monetize winners in a way that's less the case. you know, for traditional fixed charge bookings. So the theory is that money may come back in the Caribbean and stuff like that, but we just don't know. So in the absence of proof that we should massively invest in this, I think we'll just see how it goes, and accordingly, at this point in time, starter losses should be immaterial. On the AML, from what we can see, the policies and procedures are very similar between Paddy Power and Betfair, and I'm comfortable that we have very good people looking at this, and accordingly, I'm not particularly worried about the behaviours of one brand or the policies of one brand versus the other.
Thanks. And just coming back onto New Jersey, how is it going to be sold? Is it going to be sold through TVG?
It will be marketed through TVG. There'll be some local marketing in New Jersey as well. There's also potentially an audience, a kind of a Wall Street trader type audience, many of whom, or some of whom work in New Jersey, some of whom live in New Jersey. So we have targeted a different number of segments in the market, and we'll see how it goes. Right now it's in closed beta, which means there's, you know, tens of people playing on the site. It's shared liquidity. It's an interesting bet for us to take, but I think more interesting because it's an exchange, it's a regulated exchange in the United States, that we can talk to other U.S. regulators and other U.S. horse industry people about. I think it's unlikely that this is material in the coming years, either in terms of revenue or losses.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Just a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, if you do wish to ask a question, please key star then one on your telephone. And our next question comes from the line of David Jennings from Davy. Please go ahead.
Good morning, guys. Two questions, please. Firstly, just in relation to EBITDA margins, I was wondering if you could explain why they tend to fluctuate so much quarter to quarter, and specifically why the Q1 EBITDA margin tends to be so much lower than quarters 2 to 4. And then secondly, just in relation to UK retail, there continues to be a lot of negative commentary in relation to betting machines in general in UK shops. Just wondering if you think there's a tipping point at which you decide having machines in the shops isn't actually worth the hassle.
David, let me just take the first one. So you faded out at the end there. You said EBITDA margin fluctuates quarter to quarter, right? Was that your question?
Yeah, that's right. And why the margin in Q1 tends to be so much lower than quarters 2 to 4?
Well, I mean, I don't want to talk about generalities. I mean, clearly, when you look at the first quarter and you look at the results that we've already highlighted and you look at the marketing spend, those are some of the things. I mean, we don't manage the business on a quarter-by-quarter basis. We manage it for the full year, and we make investments in the right time, at the time where they think they need to be made, to drive revenue for the rest of the year and for years to come. Obviously, in a quarter of something like Cheltenham, right, you would expect a significantly more marketing investment. As you said, it was certainly our weakest quarter. My expectation would be that certainly the EBITDA margin would improve for the rest of the year, but we don't manage it on a quarterly basis. That's why it's hard to comment on specifics other than, say, marketing costs have a significant impact.
Yeah, and on the other question, David, presuming you're referring to gaming machines as opposed to the self-service terminals, I think it's a disproportionately noisy, it's part of the business that people are, that there's disproportionate noise about. Obviously for our group, it's a very small part of the business, a relatively smaller part of the business than most of the multi-channel guys. I think we continue to watch the space carefully. I'm very happy with the operational processes in place. I think the guys in the shops are in a very good business. But the likelihood is that there will be increased regulation in the months and years ahead, and that could be, we'd see what impact that has on the business. But we're very happy with the business mix at the minute, very happy to have growth across all channels, and obviously feel sensitive and keep a watchful eye on what happens from a regulatory and a taxation basis across all of our products, across all of our geographies.
Okay, thank you. Our next question is from the line of Shari Sazis from Banks Bank. Please go ahead.
Thank you so much. I do have a question regarding both Australia and U.S. business. Would you mind giving us the breakdown of how much is online and how much is offline from these two markets, or is everything offline or everything online? Thank you.
The U.S. business is 100% online. The Australian business is almost 100% online. That's some of it is telephones, but that's the betting and running products. But you can think of it as a digital business with no shops or with no land-based properties in either geography.
Okay. Well, just to follow up on that one, why are you not including, if US is 100% online and Australia also offering in the online segment part in the appendix?
In the U.S., why are we not including U.S.?
Why are you not including U.S. in online segments?
Because U.S. is a significant segment to our business. It's managed, I have a separate management team, and we feel in terms of the segment reporting, it's important for us to manage it separately, and it's important for investors to see it and to look at it and to track it separately. It is also a very different business than the rest of our online business. So while it is all digital, it is slightly different. It is a big segment. So what you're seeing in our reporting are what we deem to be significant segments for reporting as well as managing the business. And U.S. is viewed as a separate reporting entity and managed separately.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Simon French from Tenkos. Please go ahead.
Yeah, morning, guys. Two from me, please. Firstly, any colour you can give us around how Italy performed in the quarter, please, and progress there to reducing losses this year. And then secondly, just any thoughts on how multi-operator self-exclusion may be implemented in practice, both in shops this year and online next year. Thanks.
Italy is fine. We've put both management teams together. We've talked about the probable end game in terms of brands and technology stack. We have decisions to make. The Paddy Power product is superior. The fixed odds product is clearly superior. I'm kind of happy with the rate of the progress in terms of making decisions. I think we'll talk about it a little bit more in August. On the other thing, I'm not on the other on the self-exclusion databases. Not sure what commentary is like. We're compliant and supportive on the high street, and it's our intention to be compliant. And indeed, we're already being supportive of some industry matters or some industry measures to try and speed up the self-exclusion stuff for the online business.